It is 7 past the hour. Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. If you are video streaming, I got stung here and two or three places up here. The reason I was out last night, I got on the wrong side of a bunch of, they're called bald face. This is what the entomologist that came out today, bald-faced hornets. And there was a nest of them hanging near where I was mowing, and I pissed them off, and they go for the eyes. I didn't know that, but they go for the eyes. So I had a couple of these persistent little critters, and I'm at that point now. I've been stung enough times that you'd think I would not react. The truth is the reactions are getting worse. So anyway, Kathy had to take me screaming to the to the hospital. So I have 3 IVs and some saline. And 2 hours later, they sent me home with a bunch of really nasty-ass drugs that are designed to reduce inflammation. The only reason I'm telling you this is so you know we did not take the night off last night to go play. We should have. But last night, my tongue was still thick. You know, everything was hives and so on and so forth. We got the hospital. I looked down my drawers, and I said, oh, my God, everything's got hives on it. Whew, that was really, really weird. So that was why, just if you're out and about, just remember, if you're mowing your lawn, you're working your yard, remember that the reason I call them bald face is because they have white faces, these little boogers, and, they are really serious. And I felt real bad about having an exterminator come out today, but I had no choice because the nest was right at Molly's little playhouse in the backyard, because they are, they're pollinators. These wasps, and they also kill insects, kill and eat other insects. But they sting like hell, I'm telling you. And they don't stop. Once they get on you, I managed to get them off, but once they get on you, bada-bing. Okay, just wanted to let you know. I'm sorry, not trying to be self-indulgent. Let's start tonight with Prairie 2, who writes in, going the way of the brown pelican. Oh, God. Did you see some of those pictures today on the nightly news of the wildlife, the birds down in off the Louisiana coast? Prairie 2 writes, the May jobs numbers are out, and they weren't good. If you take out the census jobs, only 41,000 jobs were created, and that's 100,000 short of the population growth each month. The average length of time on unemployment increased by 1.5 weeks in May to the point now where the average length of time on unemployment is 34.5 weeks. Something else they should just get a job, folks won't tell you, is that fully a third of the unemployed don't get any benefits at all. For 7 million Americans, their only source of income is food stamps.
Well, maybe if they were starving, they'd work.
Remember that guy? What was his, the Christian? Hagee, Pastor Hagee. Back to Prairie 2. The stimulus money is running out and already things are starting to turn south. Retail sales are down and home prices are beginning to fall again. Why is the economy not recovering? Too little stimulus is one reason, as states and local governments are forced to cut jobs due to falling revenue. And this puts still more pressure on the local jobs job markets. The biggest reason is the willful activity of the biggest corporations. It's no coincidence that the layoffs really picked up steam after the 08 elections were over. And the only thing slowing down the outsourcing is that China isn't granting new factory permits. These same companies are pushing down wages by hiring temps and forcing wage concessions. Hours worked are up. But even at time and a half, workers aren't paid a living wage. With the two-tier wage systems agreed to by unions to avoid their own extinction, a large portion of U.S. workers can afford little more than a subsistence lifestyle. They build cars they can never hope to afford, much like the Mexican laborers that are now building new appliances they can't afford either. the Americans or the Mexicans. Neither can afford them. Well, this is tragically unfair. This is not the really bad part of all this. A modern economy cannot exist where the workers can't afford anything more than food and a cot. People that are still getting union scale are increasingly being forced out. And every day we get closer to the tipping point where the economy goes into free fall. That was why the Dow dropped more than 3% today. Not because they care about the unemployed. They don't care any more than BP cares about pelicans. BP, beyond pelicans. Soon, Louisiana will need a new state bird. How about the corporate vulture? Once confined to a small breeding ground on Lower Manhattan Island after being nearly hunted to extinction during the New Deal, the corporate vulture's range has expanded to cover nearly the entire planet. A real success story. Unlike the hapless brown pelican that will soon exist only in zoos. Zoos have cages with bars. There's an idea in there somewhere. Prairie 2. That's a good one. Go to his website, prairienumeral2.com. And leave a message. I don't know. I haven't been to his website lately because I get these, you know. But he's got a website, and I think he takes comments. For heaven's sakes, comment, you know, put some traffic on that site, will you? Things are still insane in South Carolina. Politics as well as the economy, everything else. South Carolina governor's race. Representative Nikki Haley, a woman hoping to be the state's first female governor, is getting all this publicity for all the wrong reasons. First, a political blogger said he and the married Nikki Haley had an inappropriate physical relationship when he worked for her in 2007. Then a lobbyist said he had a one-night stand with her in a Salt Lake City hotel room during a school choice conference. And, of course, poor Nikki Haley denies all this. Now, her parents come from India. She has a decidedly American name, doesn't she? Nikki Haley. Hey, what's happening, Nikki? But you've seen pictures of her. She's a very attractive Indian woman. And on Thursday, last night, a state senator, some freak named Jake Knotts, used an ethnic slur to refer to Haley, whose parents immigrated from India. This is what he said on a political talk show. We've got a raghead in Washington. We don't need a raghead in the state house. He later apologized, saying the remarks were meant as a joke. It's just a joke. You know, I say all those words all the time. It's just a joke. Haley, who was born a Sikh and describes herself as a Methodist, called it another shameful attack. It is not clear if the flaps are damaging Miss Haley, who, by the way, is the Tea Party or the Tea Bagger favorite in South Carolina. I'm not defending her because of her political affiliation. Hell no. But to make these remarks, the sexual innuendos are bad enough. If somebody is married and has an affair or a one-night stand, why should some blogger bring it out? I mean, what's the point? A. B. Is it really appropriate to bring up her nationality or her family's nationality, and then to use a slur like that, like raghead? Jesus God. Governor Mark Sanford, who has no unblemished record himself, he's a supporter of Haley. He said, quote, you get in the last couple of weeks in a political campaign and all kinds of zany stuff goes on, and much of it is all about trying to throw up as much mud against the wall, hoping something will stick. By and large, people can see it for what it is. End quote. Zany stuff? Calling somebody a racial slur like that? South Carolina politics. Just when you think that it's safe to go back in the water, you find a huge oil slick or something. We'll be right back. Little
entering a flying monkey-free zone.
21 past the hour. From the University of South Carolina, University of Southern California, Wausau, USC, University of Southern California news from a few weeks back, and I missed this one. Let me set it up for you. In the parable of the Good Samaritan, Jesus warned religious listeners against what today would be called in-group prejudice. You know, I'm a member of this group and everybody else sucks. The Samaritan, who was a member of a group despised by the Israelites of that time, proves himself to be more charitable to an injured traveler than two members of the Jewish clergy. Now, devout listeners startled by the Samaritan's charity would have had to confront a very difficult message, which is piety and prejudice keep close company. It appears not much has changed. A meta-analysis of 55 independent studies carried out in the United States with more than 20,000, mostly Christian participants, has found that members of religious congregations tend to harbor prejudiced views of other races. No, really? In general, the more devout the community, the greater the racism. According to the authors of the analysis led by Wendy Wood, Provost Professor of Psychology and Business at USC College and the USC Marshall School of Business. The study appeared in a recent issue of Personality and Social Psychology Review. Wood said, quote, religious groups distinguish between believers and non-believers and moral people and immoral ones, so perhaps it's no surprise that the strongly religious people in our research, who are mostly white Christians, discriminate against others who are different from them, i.e., blacks and minorities. Most of the studies reviewed by Wood's team focused on Christians because Christianity is the most common religion in the United States. Her analysis found significantly less racism among people without strong religious beliefs. The researchers found barely any difference between the amount of racism between the more conservative religious fundamentalists and more moderate Christians. Only agnostics, atheists, and other non-believers were racially tolerant. Woods also points out that people who are religious because they value more conservative traditions and social convention, whatever that is, were especially likely to be bigots. Not exactly a news flash, is it? I don't think there is anything, human construct more disadvantageous to the planet than religion. You know my position on that. But it just creeps me out. The study just bears out what most people already know. If you are a believer, if you are a Christian fundamentalist, you know everybody's going to hell unless they do exactly what your preacher tells them to do. Bastards. We're going to get to the oil spill. I have no choice. This is from Bob, not Bob Alexander. I'm sorry, but nothing will ever happen to BP or any other corporation involved with this. Oh, sure, fingers will be pointed. Blame will be spewed, claims made, the oil leak and the ecosystem will die. Birds and fish and mammals will succumb to an oily death. Committees will be formed, subpoenas issued, testimony offered, reports published, time will pass, and we will become distracted by something new. Some other emergency will grasp our attention. Maybe it'll be a war, a storm, or election, or a new television show. Who makes the playoffs? Who in Hollywood is dating whom? Or what politician is newly caught in a snare of infidelity? Will this disaster mark the end of carbon-based fuels? Of course not. Will we make sweeping changes to policy concerning petroleum company regulations? Probably not. Will we remain gullible to policies that disregard the environment, that deny what the scientific evidence is showing us? Yes, I think so. As Carl Sagan used to say, quote, the tragedy of the human species is it evolved the capacity of foresight, but refuses to use it. End quote. We have, coming back, I have, there's a new rendition of We Shall Overcome, put out by Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, and we're going to play it for you when we come back after this break. There's an introduction to it that I will share with you. It has to do with a freedom march to Gaza that never occurred. It was over the new year, 2009-2010, and it did not occur because the Israelis refused to allow it to occur. But I want you to hear this when we come back. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. To mention at 10 o'clock Eastern, about another 20, half an hour, Marcy Winograd will join us once again. She's getting attacked by everybody, including the National Jewish Democratic Council. Everybody's going after her. I can't believe this. Jesus God. Jane Harman is really in the clutches of the weapons industry and the Jewish lobby in this country. Oh, well. All right. I want to share this with you. Roger Waters wrote this May 25th on his Facebook page. Over the new year, 2009-2010, an international group of 1,500 men and women from 42 nations went to Egypt to join a freedom march to Gaza. They did this to protest the current blockade of Gaza, to protest the fact that the people of Gaza live in a virtual prison, to protest the fact that a year after the terror attack by Israeli armed forces destroyed most of their homes, hospitals, schools, and other public buildings, they have no possibility to rebuild because their borders are closed. The would-be freedom marchers wanted to peacefully draw attention to the predicament of the Palestinian population of Gaza. The Egyptian government, funded to the tune of over $2 billion a year by us, the U.S. taxpayers, would not allow the marchers to approach Gaza. How lame is that? And how predictable? I live in the USA, and during this time, December 25th, 2009, January 3rd, 2010, I saw no reference to Gaza or the Freedom March or the multinational protesters gathered there. Anyway, I was moved in the circumstances to record a new version of We Shall Overcome. It seems appropriate. P.S. June 3rd, 2010. And now, piracy. Roger Waters.
We shall overcome. shall overcome someday. Deep in my heart, I do believe that we shall overcome someday. And we'll walk hand in hand. We'll walk hand in hand. We'll walk hand in hand one day. Deep in my heart, I do that we'll work hand in hand one day. And we'll break down the prison walls. We will tear down those prison walls. Together we will tear down the prison walls on that day.
That is one of the most moving renditions of that song, that old civil rights song. It's not from a new album. It is strictly a recording that Roger Waters made in recognition of the struggle of the people of Gaza. He put on his Facebook page, many thanks to G.E. Smith, lead guitar, and Thor Johnson, drum programming. Thanks, guys. Roger Waters. So it's, again, it is a piece that Roger Waters recorded in support of the people of Gaza. And the MV Rachel Corrie, and if you don't know, you should look up Rachel Corrie, C-O-R-R-I-E. She was a 23-year-old American killed in Gaza in 2003 by an American-built bulldozer being driven by a member of the IDF who deliberately and specifically ran her down and crushed her as she was trying to protest the demolition of Palestinian homes. So MV, motor vessel, Rachel Corey, was named after her. It's still on its way to Israel. Israel is insisting it will not be allowed to dock. The Rachel Corey was part of the original Freedom Flotilla, intercepted by the Israeli military, leaving nine activists dead. It's due to arrive at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning, local time, I guess, local time, 8 a.m. Saturday. There were earlier reports that the Rachel Corey had turned back, but a spokesman for the ship confirmed this morning that it was still bound for Israel. Martin O'Quigley from the Ireland-Palestine Solidarity Campaign, which is working with the Free Gaza Movement, which organized the ship, said he spoke to two people aboard, on board at 7:30 this morning. O'Quigley said, quote, they're 150 miles from Gaza, and they should be approaching the exclusion zone at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning. They are about 80 miles from the previous interception point, end quote. O'Quigley said he had spoken to both Myreid McGuire, the Nobel Peace Prize laureate, and Jenny Graham from the Free Gaza Movement, two of a total of 11 passengers on the ship. The Corey is attempting to defy Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who said yesterday the ship would not be allowed to reach the blockaded area. Ynet, the Israeli news website Ynet, reported him as saying, quote, we shall not allow the ships to reach Gaza, not now, not later on. He also added, we intend to direct the Rachel Corey ship to the Ashdod port and transfer its civilian goods to Gaza following a security check, end quote. The Rachel Corey, which is funded by the Free Gaza Movement, is carrying 11 passengers, including the Scottish captain Eric Harkis, in addition to the six British and Irish citizens. There are also five Malaysians traveling on the ship, including a member of parliament and three journalists. The Rachel Corey is carrying school supplies, printing paper, children's shoes, wheelchairs, sports equipment, and fire extinguishers, according to organizers. Israel bars cement and other building materials from entering Gaza, saying that they are often used for building tunnels to smuggle in weapons and explosives. Well, I'll tell you what. You let somebody come and occupy this country and watch how quickly we build tunnels. Oh, wait a minute. What am I saying? This is the United States. We don't give a damn what happens. We allow ourselves to be pushed around. But oddly enough, by our own leaders. We'll be right back. After the next break, Marcy Winograd will join us. Dennis Bernstein and Jesse Strauss, writing at consortiumnews.com today. I want to share this with you. With a bloody raid on the Freedom Flotilla, Israel has demonstrated once again its willingness to kill innocents in order to sustain its punishing blockade on the Gaza Strip, even when doing so raises more and more questions about nuclear-armed Israel's national sanity. Scholar Norman Finkelstein, author of a new book on Israel's 2008-2009 assault on Gaza entitled This Time We've Gone Too Far, deemed the attack on the six ships in international waters that left nine people dead Monday the actions of a, quote, demented, lunatic state, end quote. And might I add, Norman Finkelstein is not a Baptist. According to survivors, who include a former ambassador, a Nobel laureate, and several well-known human rights activists, the Israeli commandos came heavily armed with explosives and automatic weapons. and some opened fire from the air before landing on the Mavi Marmara, a Turkish-flagged vessel leading the flotilla. However, Israeli officials offered a competing narrative of a peaceful initiative that only went wrong because of the physical resistance from activists on the ships. The government's version was that the commandos were armed primarily with paintball guns. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu also was unapologetic about the lethal assault, claiming that the embargo is justified by fears that military-related items could be smuggled into Gaza. At a press conference on Wednesday, Netanyahu said, quote, "We will never apologize for defending ourselves. I'm very proud of what our soldiers did. This was a hate boat. These weren't pacifists or peace activists," end quote. Among those offering a contradictory account was Ed Peck, a former U.S. ambassador and deputy director of the White House Task Force on Terrorism during the Reagan administration, who was on board the Spendoni vessel of the Freedom Flotilla. Peck said, quote, "The first thing we knew was the sound of footsteps, and my eyelids flicked open, and there they were, heavily armed. The Israeli government keeps referring to the paint guns, but the paint guns were attached to the automatic weapons and the stun grenades and the pepper spray and the tasers and everything else that these guys carry," end quote. Well, the Israelis claim they were attacked violently by Al-Qaeda and Hamas-connected terrorists. Very few soldiers were wounded and none died. Israeli officials showed off knives and some homemade weapons that allegedly were used by the Mavi Marmara defenders. No firearms of any kind were found on the ships, nor were there any military-related contraband other than bags of concrete and other building materials, which Israel has banned from Gaza, purportedly because terrorists, quote, might hide in the new buildings. Because of Israel's embargo on construction materials, Gazans have been unable to rebuild following Israel's devastating offensive that killed 1,400 people and left many of Gaza's 1.5 million people homeless. While no Israeli commandos died in Monday's raid, 9 peace activists were killed, including some with multiple bullet wounds, apparently from close range, and others due to what seemed like indiscriminate fire. Sarah Colborne, Director of Campaigns and Operations at the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, was on the Mavi Marmara. Later speaking at a press conference in London, she said unarmed activists were shot by the commandos and that the Israeli attackers ignored calls for medical aid. She said, quote, "There was live ammunition flying around, and I could hear the sounds of the bullets flying and the whir of the helicopter blades as people were dropped down onto the roof. Helicopters appeared and gunshots were heard. We then had the first passenger fatally injured. He was shot in the head. It was very clear it was live ammunition." Huwaida Araf, chairperson of the Free Gaza Movement, was on the other ship, the Challenger 1, as it was attacked by Israeli commandos by air and sea. As she and other activists resisted the takeover solely with their bodies, she watched the attack on the nearby Mavi Marmara. She also said the commandos opened fire from the air. "I could see the beginnings of the attack on the Turkish ship, because we were traveling almost side by side with it," Araf said. "I saw the Israeli naval Zodiacs approach the ship. I heard explosions, which I took to be concussion grenades, and then shooting. I don't know if it was rubber-coated bullets, live ammunition, or what, but there was definitely shooting coming from the Israelis toward the ship before they even boarded, and then I saw a helicopter overhead," end quote. Araf and the peace activists who were on Challenger 1 were beaten, tasered, handcuffed, and locked in a room. They were also threatened with guard dogs and were searched to remove any telephones and cameras. For Araf, the harsh treatment didn't end with the violent seizure of the boat. The fact that she was an organizer with dual U.S.-Israeli citizenship made her an interesting target for multiple interrogations. After refusing to answer questions without legal or consul representation, she ended up being one of the first to be released. The interrogators, quote, "forced me into a police van, literally, by pulling me up by my hair and my hands and feet and beating me," she said. "They drove me out of the port, stopped the car at some point, I'm not sure where, because I was a little disoriented after being punched in the face and the jaw, and then they just opened the door and threw me out of the van," end quote. Peck, the former U.S. ambassador and counterterrorism advisor, said he asked Israeli officers who were processing him for deportation why he was being deported, given that he had not violated any Israeli law. He was told that he had illegally entered Israel. I said, "Well, now wait, our ship was taken by armed commandos. I was brought here at gunpoint against my will, and you call that illegally entering Israel?" End quote. Israel and its defenders maintained that the high seas raid was justified on the grounds of Israeli national security. But Richard Falk, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, said Israel's actions at sea in international waters was, quote, as clear a violation of international humanitarian law, international law of the seas, and international criminal law as we're likely to see in the early part of the 21st century, end quote. Falk also said the United States might also be implicated. Quote, we are certainly morally and politically implicit and responsible in these kinds of Israeli tactics and undertakings, said Falk. But he added, quote, the political will is lacking at the government level and at the international institutional level to provide that kind of protection to the people aboard ships headed to Gaza, end quote. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. It is 7 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show on a Friday night. Thanks a lot for sticking around. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Marcy Winograd, who is running in the 36th Congressional District of that state against Jane Harman, the incumbent. Hi, Marcy.
Hi, Mike. It's wonderful to be with you. I'm so glad we connected.
Yeah, me too. Hey, listen, not to start anything too negative here, but I'm on the mailing email list of the National Jewish Democratic Council.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, and are you aware of what they're saying about you?
No, but I am aware that I've been getting a lot of the email. I got an email from a rabbi. I think he was asked to write me. It's a little strange, I have to say, to be on the other end of receiving emails, you know, to be lobbied and so forth, but I did assure the rabbi that I will support a two-state, one-state, whatever solution, as long as it's a solution and we have peace in the Middle East.
Yeah, James Besser, who writes for National Jewish Week, he's a columnist, also is getting a little bit, I don't quite understand what's going on here. Why? I understand how politics works. I certainly do. But the kind of negativity that's being slammed at you, it doesn't make any sense on a logical basis, but I guess we're talking politics, so what's to make sense, right?
Well, you know, a friend of mine who's active in human rights organizations and has wanted to do work around this issue of peace in the Middle East, he said to me once, and it resonated, he said, you know, Marcy, the work that you're doing, that I'm doing, and others are doing, Jews who are speaking out and advocating human rights for all and equality, it's work that's analogous to the work that was done by white Southern abolitionists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were vilified. They were arrested. They were told to shut up.
Well, you're
they refused to.
You're taking everybody on. I'll tell you, regardless of the outcome of this election, I certainly have come to respect very much the work that you're doing, the positions that you're taking. You know where we all live here in June of 2010. You know what the international situation is. You know what the pressures can be on political candidates. And I'm astonished, I have to say that your position is as firm as it is and that your sense of justice is what it is. You don't find that very often.
Thank you, Mike. I take that as high praise from you. I appreciate that.
You certainly don't find it in so many office holders. I don't want to get into slamming Jane Harman on a personal basis, but dear God, I hope that your campaign somehow pulls this out. I realize you've had some good polls, but the hard part is here with the challenger, no matter how just your position is. The hard part is overcome. So how long has Jane Harman held that a seat?
Jane Harman has been in and out of office because she ran for governor at one point, but basically 15 years.
15 years.
She's very entrenched in coming. Frankly, Mike, I don't think she wants to be there anymore.
Really?
No, not at all.
Well,
I mean,
she could make a hell of a lot more money if she got out and went to work for, as a lobbyist.
As a lobbyist for a weapons manufacturer.
For a weapons manufacturer. What's the latest on your polling, if you've done any recently?
Well, we did an electronic poll a few weeks ago, and That was before my mail dropped, before I was airing commercials, which we now have on television. Jane Harman sold us out to Wall Street. We need Marcy Winograd as our voice in Congress, and so forth. That was before all that, and at that point, let's see what happened. I think she had 43% support, which is not great for a long-time incumbent.
No, it isn't.
And I had about 30%, and the rest were undecided. Typically, undecideds break 2-1 for the challenger. That's why people are undecided.
Yeah.
They're not sold on the incumbent.
Yeah.
So if that were the case then, that would have put me 4 points behind her within striking distance, which is what we said. And since then, we've certainly gotten the word out. I've been on TV. I've been on Spanish TV, Telemundo, Spanish radio. I've been, sending out mailers. Our latest mailer is Jobs Not Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And it contrasts, there's a picture of me at the beach at my kickoff,
mm-hmm.
the beautiful ocean in the backdrop, and it says that we can apply our oceans of talent to building a new economy and transitioning from a war economy. And then on the other half of the mailer, we have Jane Harman sold us out to war, and it's, the whole, it's Iraq, it's on fire, and it looks like, I won't say where she is, but I think we can use our imagination.
Let's run down one more time. We've talked about this, your last campaign and this one. The reason you would be better for the 36th district.
I would be better, Mike, for the 36th congressional district because I would expand the job opportunities, certainly in aerospace, where our engineers face very limited choices. Build a bomb, build a rocket, that's it,
Mm-hmm.
And if you are working in the space end of aerospace, you might consider yourself lucky. Why is it that we have to go to Spain to buy a mass transit or Italy to buy parts for trains? This is ridiculous. We've got to bring manufacturing back to this country, and we've got to demand federal dollars be invested, whether it be in federal job creation or private job creation, but in contracts that are going to put us back to work, 8 million Americans back to work in productive ways. A part of this mailer that we sent out to 50,000 registered voters today says, look, this is how I would, these are the jobs that I would create, and this is how I would pay for those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about creating a national environmental corps. Look at what's happening in the Gulf with BP. What a disaster.
Oh, my God.
Now, we need our brilliant scientists and engineers and skilled workforce to be part of a national environmental guard. So we call them in to clean up this kind of mess. We don't leave it to those who got us into the mess and have no idea how to get us out.
Is it true? I think it is, but correct me if I'm wrong, that you, your position on fossil fuels is to move away from the hydrocarbons and more into renewable or sustainable energy. Is that?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I wrote the resolution that put our California Democratic Party on record opposing new offshore and onshore oil drilling along the coast. This was at a time when our state lands commission was seriously considering new offshore leases because our state is in a budget crisis and hoped to lease the coast to the oil companies. I also have called for the expansion of our aerospace industry to build solar-powered cities, to develop wind farms. Why not? That's what we need to be doing. I mean, every city in the West Coast should be powered by solar energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about education? Again, California is, I don't have to tell you, you're there, but Schwarzenegger's budget shortfalls, it's not just him, but I'm saying he's the governor, but the budget shortfalls, all the school teachers that are being furloughed or fired, California used to have the sine qua non where it concerned education in this country, and was a trendsetter, trendsetter for educational advancement. Now we have Texas rewriting textbooks and everybody having to follow suit because they buy so many. What are you going to do for the state of California where it concerns education? God knows something has to be done here.
Yes, I agree. I would, first of all, would push to revisit No Child Left Behind, which is a federal mandate, and it's punitive in nature. You know, people with good intentions may have been involved in the creation of this mandate, but at the end of the day, it's so punitive that if you don't have 95% of your special education students taking these tests they can't read, you may be labeled a failing school, and if you do that year in, year out, in 4 years, you're up for a school takeover and privatization. So we see it as a backdoor attempt to privatize our schools. Well, certainly there is a literacy crisis. I know that because I've been coaching in our schools for a long time. I'm a teacher of 15 years and a school facilitator who's worked up and down this district with teams of teachers to embed literacy strategies in every subject and every department. I would say, you know, we'd be much better off if we threw this No Child Left Behind out the window and said, let's take the money that we're giving school districts to test their students and retest them. Why don't we buy them all computers and give them access to state-of-the-art technology? Why don't we give them the money to create classroom libraries where students have authentic, real-life experiences with books as opposed to Basel readers, strictly Basel readers, or test-taking booklets? Let's make learning joyful. If we wanted to make learning joyful and fun and engaging and relevant, how would we do that? If we started with that question, maybe we'd get there.
We have to break here. Can you hold on a second?
Sure.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come back because we're coming up on a break here pretty quick. We're talking with Marcy Winograd, who is running against Jane Harman for the 36th Congressional District in California. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Poisonous sky. In California, the body counts keep getting higher. It's evil out there, man. That state is always on fire. Everyone has a system, but they can't seem to win. Even Bob Geldof looks alarmingly thin. I got to get on that shuttle, get me out of this place. But there's gonna be warfare up there in outer space. It's been a hard day on the planet. How much is it all worth? It's getting harder to understand it. Things are tough all over on Earth.
Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang. Boom, 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 boom. Bang, 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 bang.
And now a soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy. When you
walk that walk. 21 past the hour. This is the Malloy Show. We're talking to Marcy Winograd, candidate in the 36th Congressional District of California against Jane Harman. During the break, Marcy, I was looking at your website, and I want to tell people, if you want to know more about this woman and what she stands for, go to Winograd, W-I-N-O-G-R-A-D, numeral 4, winogradforcongress.com. There's a place where you can contribute money. The election is Tuesday. You can volunteer. I'm not much for endorsements, but I'll tell you what, if you look at the list of her endorsements, everybody from Norman Solomon, Ed Asner, Ray McGovern, Jim Hightower, come on. And then you look at the organizational endorsements. I just can't believe that the people in the 36th district, Marcy, are not going to send you to Washington and send Jane to go to work for the defense industry. I just, when I read your website, some of these articles you have up, or your points of view. Winograd asks, where's Harman? Why silence on the Israeli assault? Next one. Peace candidate Winograd denounces murders of free Gaza activists. I mean, just on and on. I just, oh my God.
Well, you know, Mike, I really appreciate your support. And I'll say this, you know, if people wanted more of the same, they would vote for Jane Harman. And I figure if I'm running, I'm running because of principles. I'm running because I need to be a voice for what has not been spoken but felt at a very deep level. We don't need more of the same, right? Jane, I say to people, look, if you want war, you want more war, and you want Wall Street greed, you vote for Jane Harman.
Right.
She's your woman. If you want a new green economy, if you want peace, vote for Marcy Winograd. Very clear.
The only thing that worries me, all things being equal, if you and Harmon were head to head with no support or contradiction from anybody, if it's just the two of you on a stage and you got into a debate, I don't think there would be any doubt in people's minds after they heard the positions of both of you on these issues, whatever the issues are. The other thing, the fact that you're a school teacher, my God, what do people want? This is the thing that really gets under my skin and drives me crazy, Marcy. What do we Americans want these days? I mean, all hell is breaking loose no matter where you look.
That's true. I mean, we're witnessing the greatest redistribution of wealth, and it's going upwards. And my plan to fix the economy, I call for reversing the Bush tax cuts on the wealthy. I call for a modest fee on stock trades on Wall Street, maybe a penny for every $4 traded. Close the corporate loophole so ExxonMobil actually pays taxes. Seize the money that's being stashed in the Caribbean, those tax havens, and you could put 8 million Americans back to work.
Wow.
This is a referendum on our economy. And that sounds wonkish, but at the end of the day, it's how do we want to invest our resources? Do we want to invest our resources in a war economy as we face a near $1 trillion military budget?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we want to say, you know what, this is not the most productive way, clearly, for us to employ our populace? We need to create jobs that are life-affirming.
Where are you going to be this weekend where people in the 36th might be able to come out and meet you?
Well, tomorrow I plan to be at the Torrance Farmers Market around 11 o'clock, where I often go on Saturdays. They have a bustling, a terrific farmers market.
Mm-hmm.
I'll probably be walking precincts in Wilmington or Lenox this weekend. I'll tweet it. How about that?
Okay.
I'll let you know exactly where I'm going to be. We are going to have a very bustling headquarters this weekend. If anyone's interested, and if you don't live in Los Angeles, by all means, you can help out. We have a virtual phone bank that's modeled after the Obama campaign in California, the software that that campaign used, so that if you live in Florida or you live in Pennsylvania, if you live in Alaska, you can still phone bank for Winograd for Congress. Just email bill@winogradforcongress.com or go to our website and sign up to volunteer, and we will get in touch with you.
Yeah.
But we'll be phone banking and walking all weekend.
Mm-hmm. Well, people need to go to your website, Winograd4Congress.com. And, you know, I hear a lot of bitching and complaining. I do a share of it myself, believe me. But when there's a chance to change things, when there's a chance to move out the deadwood and put in somebody who's going to do the kind of job that you're going to do, I hope people will volunteer through your website all over the country to work these phone banks. I may be, you know, just blowing smoke in the dark here, but I...
No, you're not. We think that there is a real chance to make a difference in real time here. And as an organizer with Progressive Democrats of America, I'm very proud of the fact that we have PDA chapters all over the country that are phoning with us. So there's a lot of dialogue going on right now.
Well, that will be, I think, at this point, this late in the campaign, the election's Tuesday, that's going to be your biggest asset, is to have people on the phones calling voters in the 36th and just asking them, what do they want? Do they want more of the same old, same old, or do they want you?
Exactly. And I think that Jane Harmon is going to be focused on a media blitz. You know, she's running an attack ad on me on cable television. She sent out a few attack mailers with some lies in them. I'm not surprised. You know, it's kind of a last-minute drop. It's hard to respond, you know, when there is no time to respond. She's obviously taking this very seriously, but I can tell you one thing. She's not going to have an army of volunteers walking the district this weekend. Winograd for Congress will be out.
You will. All right.
In force.
Marcy.
Hopefully with your listeners as well on the phone.
I hope so. Marcy, I'm going to be watching this election Tuesday. Dear God, I hope you win. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Right.
Really appreciate the time.
Take care, Marcy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
It's about 25 before the hour. I hope people in California and around the country will work to get Marcy Winograd elected. I feel about her candidacy the way I felt about Dennis Kucinich and a few other people. There are still some decent people running for public office. I mean, it's very easy right now for all of us to be real cynical bastards about all this. I am most of the time. But occasionally you come across a candidate who you just know, you gut level know, that this person is going to, if elected, is going to do the kind of job that you would do or I would do. I think a lot of us had a similar feeling about candidates in the past, but once they get elected, you know, things kind of, well, and not even that, even before they get elected, we have some feelings about a candidate, but there's always a little bit of doubt, always a little bit of, well, is this smoke and mirrors? That's not the case, as far as I'm concerned, with Marcy Winograd. I mean, you have to make your own decision on that, but we have had her last campaign and this campaign, we have had what, Kathy? 7-8 conversations with this woman. And I hope that she will turn Jane Harmon out. I mean, it is enough, dear God. You know, we all talk about, well, things are breaking down. The center's not holding. There's a chance to do something about it. You know, the time will come if we're not careful here, if we don't save our political system, and it is in dire need of being saved, we're going to reach a point where corporate candidates are going to win everything. Now, if you think we're screwed now, think about that. Marcy Winograd is not a corporate candidate. Please, I'm begging for the people in the 36 to send Marcy Winograd to Congress. Kay Petrini, our education affairs correspondent up in San Francisco, sent me an email today. Not a report card, but she writes, Mike, yesterday I was paging through a catalog from the clothing company Athleta. Usually when I leaf through it, I think, damn, I should have gotten into a profession that paid more so I could buy these clothes. Or, why couldn't I be a genetic freak of nature like these models are? This time my reaction was totally different. The first page had information on the location of Athleta's photo shoot. Part of it reads as follows, quote, Tranquilo Bay, nestled inside a Panamanian rainforest overlooking the Caribbean Sea, is the ultimate getaway for the adventurous or the not-so-adventurous. Come to Tranquilo Bay and relax in comfort while you explore one of the most biologically diverse ecological zones on the planet. Choose from a full menu of wild to mild activities, jungle explorations, kayaking, surfing, fishing, snorkeling, scuba diving, birding, or simple and secluded beachcombing. Our guests unpack, settle in, and truly experience our unique tropical location. Escape reality and enjoy paradise at our all-inclusive lodge. End quote. All I could think while reading that was, one of the most biologically diverse ecological zones on the planet. Not for long. The American media is, as usual, focused solely on the impact of the BP disaster on the Gulf Coast. But with geography and ocean currents being what they are, it is inevitable that the death of the Gulf of Mexico will lead to the death, partial or complete, of the adjacent bodies of water, including, I would think, the Caribbean. If you want to check out how beautiful this area of Panama is, here's the link. Go to tinyurl.com/25, C-S-T-H-R. Of course, you're more likely to be distracted by how beautiful those models are. Okay. And Robert Reich today writing it on his blog. you know, the former labor secretary during the Clinton years. Just before his daily briefing Wednesday, Admiral Thad Allen, the president's military appointment in the Gulf, had the BP logo removed from the podium. Jesus, God. The White House apparently wants to distance itself from BP, bad petroleum. But confusion over who's in charge, BP or the White House, continues to reign. Question about whether BP can successfully shear off the well pipe in order to fit a cap over it. Admiral Allen answered, quote, "I don't think the issue is whether or not we can make the second cut. It's about how fine we can make it, how smooth we can make it," end quote. As Tonto asked the Lone Ranger, "Who's we, Kemosabe?" We, that is the American people and its representatives, are not in control of this. BP is in control. Yet BP has a long record of negligence, and it was BP's negligence that probably caused this disaster. So why is it in control? If BP's attempt to cap the well fails again, BP says America will have to wait until August to stop the surge of oil into the Gulf, when BP says it will complete a relief well. August is way too late. Since the explosion on April 20th, the Gusher has leaked anywhere from 21 million to 45 million gallons of oil into the Gulf. At that rate, the Gulf will be filled with more than twice that amount by August. How do we know BP is using every possible resource to stop this? How do we know it's providing accurate information? How do we know it's properly weighing risks and benefits to America? Politics is about to take over from policy in any event. Forecasters say the oil will probably start washing up on Florida's coast this Friday, not only threatening its fragile system of bays and islands, but also rendering miles of white sand beaches unusable. The tourist destination that's been called the Redneck Riviera will be coated with thick black ooze. If you think there's been a political firestorm so far, you ain't seen nothing yet. Florida beaches are crucial to its economy. In 2008, at least 60% of vacation spending in Florida occurred in beachfront cities. Florida's economy is central to its politics, and Florida politics is, well, think back on the last several presidential elections. The president is proposing to roll back billions of dollars in tax breaks for the oil companies. He's appointed a commission to find out why BP's well blew. But unless or until he takes charge, putting BP's U.S. subsidiary under temporary receivership, forcing BP to use all its available resources and submit itself to full federal oversight and control, his own presidency is in danger of being tarred by the same thick gunk that's about to wash up on the Redneck Riviera. Kathy and I have spent an awful lot of time on the Redneck Riviera. We talked about this when the spill first occurred. We posted some pictures, didn't we, of Molly on the beach. Her entire life, I mean, other than going out of country a couple of times, when we've made trips here in the States, almost invariably it has been to the Redneck Riviera, to Cape San Blas, to St. George's Island, to Port St. Joe, Apalachicola. And it's hard to imagine what's about to occur. And the capitalist corporatist empire that is British Petroleum and the entire energy industry doesn't care. It can be refineries in Texas, beaches in Florida, mountain communities in West Virginia. Doesn't matter. I just wonder how long we're going to put up with it. There's a grim forecast out about the oil spill disaster and its potential impact on the North Carolina coast. A computer model outlines the Gulf of Mexico's loop current. The same current is the current that a Duke professor, along with other scientists, believes could carry oil up the Carolina coast in a matter of weeks. Duke physical oceanography professor Susan Lozier said, quote, "Once it goes through the Florida Straits, which it's about ready to do, it could be a matter of weeks to months." Lozier studies large-scale ocean circulation at Duke University. She said, in general, what's carried in the Gulf Stream stays offshore of North Carolina in the Gulf Stream. But with this disaster, we're at nature's mercy. Lozier said, quote, "If there's like onshore winds or favorable winds to bring things onshore. There's a possibility that some oil could hit the North Carolina coast, end quote. National Center for Atmospheric Research computer models paint a picture of pollution entering the Gulf Loop, rounding the tip of Florida, and heading north as far as Cape Hatteras, hitting East Coast beaches as early as July. Mosher said, quote, it would do the same harm as they're seeing at the Gulf Coast, except a much lesser extent. My guess is that in the beaches off North Carolina, people probably wouldn't be able to tell that there would be that much oil. I expect there would be that much dilution. But Lozier says pollution could still threaten sea life. And there's a couple of wild cards. The hurricane season, which could wash even more oil ashore in the length of time it'll take BP to completely plug a well. The well. Scientists are cautioning that this is not a forecast, but it is a possibility. We'll be right back.
Our leaders say it's of no concern to us, as long as we get our hands on that greasy, slimy stuff. For the love of oil, we lost 4,000 people. For the love of oil, how many more will die? For the love of oil, we're roasting our green planet. It's not worth
go to bed angry. Exactly. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
But it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
10 before 9 before the hour. Podcast trivia, at the bottom of the final hour of the program tonight, that'll be in about 45 minutes. So stick around for that, where you're familiar with it, I'm sure. You will call in. We will take your call. We will ask you a question, multiple choice. And if you get it right, you win a one-year subscription to the Malloy Show podcast, commercial-free podcast. We want... Do you have the... Excuse me, you have that list of people who sent us gift podcasts? Some of those people did not request anonymity at all. Oh, okay. All right. Well, I guess we're not going to mention the names, but thank you very much. The people who are making these contributions that pay for the gift subscriptions, we do appreciate it. My producer there suggests that maybe we should not mention the names. So anyway, thanks to everybody. North Carolina beaches, huh? And then the Environmental News Service out of Boulder, Colorado, reports that oil from the massive spill in the Gulf is likely to extend along thousands of miles of the Atlantic coast and into open ocean as early as this summer. And they're citing a detailed computer modeling study released today by the National Center for Atmospheric Research. The research was supported in part by the National Science Foundation. And the, what is NCAR? National Center for Atmospheric Research. NCAR. National Center for Atmospheric Research. NCAR scientist, Cynthia Peacock said, I've had a lot of people ask me, will the oil reach Florida? Actually, our best knowledge says the scope of this environmental disaster is likely to reach far beyond Florida with impacts that have yet to be understood, end quote. The computer simulations indicate that once the oil in the uppermost ocean has been entrained in the Gulf of Mexico's fast-moving loop current, it is likely to reach Florida's Atlantic coasts within weeks. It can then move as far north as Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, before turning east to the open ocean. Model More metal studies are underway that will indicate what might happen to the oil in the Atlantic Ocean. A member of the research team from the Leibniz Institute of Marine Science, University of Kiel, Germany, said, quote, "We've been asked if and when remnants of the oil spill could reach the European coastlines. Our assumption is that the enormous lateral mixing in the ocean, together with the biological disintegration of the oil, should reduce the pollution to levels below harmful concentrations. But we would like to have this backed up by numbers from some of the best ocean models," unquote. So they're not sure. This is just, I mean, it's just unbelievable. I don't believe that we've been talking about this now for, 6 weeks? Has it been that? 46 days. I almost feel inclined to apologize for talking about the same thing for so long. I don't know what to do. I really don't. I'm just, I tell you what, let's open the phone lines. You want to do that? Okay. Let's take some calls. The number is 877-996-2556. Oh, and by the way, I guess Kathy tweeted it or posted on our website. We had an expert that nobody else has talked with on this from NYU. And there was some kind of a family situation came up, and he couldn't make it tonight. But he will be with us Monday night, and I want you to hear this guy. He is on loan from NYU to try to add his expertise to the situation of correcting this disaster. What else we got here? Oh, yeah, the former chairman of the Republican Party of Florida was arrested Wednesday for allegedly running a scam bilking money from the party. The Florida Department of Law Enforcement took Jim Greer, 47, into custody at his Orlando area home. He's charged with one count of organized fraud, 4 counts of felony grand theft, 1 count of money laundering. Mr. Greer funneled party money to a company called Victory Strategies that he controlled and concealed his relationship with, according to investigators. On Greer's orders, the Republican Party of Florida paid Victory Strategies for campaign work that was never performed. Greer got about $125,000 of the almost $200,000 the party paid Victory Strategies. Victory Strategies also received money from a fund Greer had set up for his reelection campaign as party chairman. He used the money on ritzy hotels, gourmet restaurants, and private jets. Oh, Jesus, God. Yeah, that's according to Huffington Post. The Associated Press, really. Oh, God. And we have a break coming here. We'll come back and do some more. I've got some more emails I want to share with you. Plus, your phone calls and podcast trivia coming up at 5:30 the hour. Stay with us, y'all. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It's 7 past the hour. That line in that Moody Blues song, listen to the tide slowly turning, wash all our troubles away. Oh, my God. Got an email here from Steve the Banker. He writes, I want to remind the American public and those on the Gulf Coast who British Petroleum is. And we talked about this before, but Steve has good reason here to go ahead and mention it again. Steve writes, they're the same country or company that held the Iranian oil franchise for the British crown in the 1950s. And when the president of Iran, who was democratically elected, wanted a fair distribution of oil wealth that gushed out of his own land, BP said no. The British said no. The British wanted to hold on to 90% of the wealth from Iranian oil. BP and the British begged Truman to illegally take out the Iranian president. He said no. But Eisenhower said yes, and that was the beginning of the CIA history of covert overthrows all over the world. That is BP. The BP that caused the U.S. to lie to its own citizens and to the world then and now. That is the history of BP. Profit over elections, profit over blood, profit over the law, profit over white sandy beaches, and profit over the American people. That, my friends, is BP. It is time to nationalize their holdings on all U.S. territory and distribute them to American companies and let the American people own the profits and let those profits go to school books and cancer research. Steve the Banker. Well, Steve, I would only expand on the fact that as vile and filthy as BP and the entire oil industry is, they represent, they're just the spear point of the vile and filthy system of capitalism. I understand, Steve, you're in the banking industry, and I get that. I'm not opposed to locally owned banks at all. The SNLs were a perfect example of collectivism in the banking industry, where people contributed and people were able to borrow, and it stayed local. The savings and loans, I think, the concept. And now you find that concept in the credit unions. They are highly socialistic. I don't know why people don't talk about it. You put money in, the money stays there, you take money out. If you take money out, it will cost you 6% interest. If you put money in, they will pay you currently 2% interest. So, to me, Steve, it's not just BP, although they are the most vile sons of bitches. I have one of the most vile corporations in the history of vile corporations. They really are. The death and destruction that BP has caused, not, as you point out, going back to the 50s, the overthrow of Mohammed Mossadegh, and God only knows how many other people have died who have been murdered, so that BP and the oil industry in particular and capitalism in general can continue to thrive. And what have they done? What have we got to, seriously, I don't want to get back on this rap again tonight because I've done it a couple of times. What have we got to show, seriously, what have we got to show for 200 years, not even 200 years, maybe 150 years of run-amok capitalism? What have we got to show for it? Huh? Come on, you right-wing turds. Why don't you call in and tell me what we've got to show for it? We have a collapsing global economy. We have more wars than we can think of. We have insurgents going on all over the planet. All sorts of governments are in the process of being overthrown, either because of mismanagement, because they followed a capitalist model, or because of the fascistic nature of the government, because it is backed by capitalists who want to work in a militarily controlled area where the government is militaristic. Come on. What do we got to show for 150 years of unbridled predatory capitalism? What? Chaos, death, and destruction, and a 0.1% around this dying planet that are filthy rich, absolutely filthy rich. And the false promise of capitalism, of course, is the story that they tell. It's like a story that you tell your 5-year-old kid at night. You know, someday you can be rich too. Someday you'll find the pot of gold. Someday you'll be walking in the woods and leprechauns will jump out and say, there it is. There's our pot of gold. You fool. Hopi Indian in Arizona, GR writes, regarding the assault on the flotilla, GR writes, Israel is the center of some bizarre Dr. Strange-Lovian scenario where the symbiosis between the U.S. and Israel has its roots in neocon Christian fundamentalist dogma combined with far-right doomsday warmongering. Israel has become the Nazis they so detest, and the U.S. is so corrupted and held in such Christian fear, it is lost. In the Christian dogma, Israel must be the center of World War III, Armageddon, for Jesus to return. The Jewish state, of course, still awaits the Messiah's first arrival, but similar tribulations must occur for that to happen. One thing is clear, the U.S. government from top to bottom is corrupted and bought off by Israel and its money. Many U.S. government officials, in my opinion, should be registered Israeli agents. In fact, they are acting in that capacity. Sadly, they just may all get exactly what they want, Armageddon. Somehow, though, I don't see that Jesus guy showing up. G.R. Hopi. Arizona. Let me see. More emails on the attack on the flotilla. Stephen from Burbank writes, Mike, so the press secretary, that would be Robert, what's his name? Huh? Gibbs? I keep forgetting his name. So the press secretary says that investigating and prosecuting wouldn't help the victims of the Israeli atrocity. Perfect logic for getting out of Iraq and Afghanistan. It won't help the victims of the 9/11 attacks. From WIDOC. Murder and piracy are the only words that can describe Israel's crimes against the international humanitarian aid flotilla. This is a continuation of their ongoing policy of ethnic cleansing of Palestine, as confessed by Ben-Gurion. They have been killing with impunity since 1948, which includes their 1967 attack on the USS Liberty. Their claim to that land, based on the biblical narrative written by the Hebrews, is absurd. Literature that pegs the planet's creation as subsequent to written history that exists in China has no credibility. America's complicity in Israel's crimes will contribute to our downfall, which sadly may already be unfolding. Hopefully, rising cultures will emulate the ideals of America while foregoing its crimes. Yeah, that would be nice, wouldn't it? That would be nice. Okay, last one, then we're going to do some phone calls. So hold on just a second. This is from Paul. Oh, damn. Ready for a break, aren't we? Okay. Well, when we come back, I want to do Paul's letter, and then we'll take... Paul's letter sounds like something out of the Bible. Paul's letter to the Thessalonians. Paul's letter to the Ephesians. Paul's letter to the Corinthians. And here we have Paul's letter to the Molloy program. Amen and amen. Blessed be the name of Paul. We'll do this. Actually, he's the Cosmic Buffalo. All right, Cosmic Buffalo, your email when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy. Cosmic Buffalo.
Rhetoric, get locked and loaded with Mike Malloy.
It is 22 past the hour. We have a breaking story here that I seem to be having trouble getting. Kathy, why don't you open your mic and tell us what it is?
Well, I just saw the headline on Reuters that just said that the Israeli Navy has intercepted the Rachel Corrie flotilla.
That's it?
That's all it was. I'll try to find more.
Yeah, the link you sent me went back to an oil gusher story. So, okay, 22 past the hour. This is from Paul. Mike, I listen to you as much as possible and have to tell you that I bust out laughing when you call Glenn Beck out for going after Obama's 11-year-old daughter. He's a real piece of crap for sure. It's easy to see why this country is behind most of the rest of the Western industrialized country when nearly half of our community believe what this moron is spouting. Getting ahead of myself, I want to talk about the attack on the humanitarian flotilla in international waters. It should be no surprise that the Israelis believe they can do anything they want without any reprisals from the United States and thus the UN. To prove my point, I'd like to direct the attention to the USS Liberty in 1967, when during the Six-Day War, Israeli Navy, Air Force, and Army units attacked, unprovoked, the Liberty. Not only was it in international waters, but it was a clear and sunny day. The American flag was clearly visible, and yet the attacks were unprovoked and brutal, causing 37 deaths of American soldiers with 120 wounded. Over some 6 hours, the Liberty was attacked from the air. Some 12 sorties were sent to attack the ship. From stem to stern, port to starboard, strafing took place. But the very interesting and incriminating evidence comes in the form of recordings made by the U.S. observation aircraft monitoring the communications when they picked up communications between the pilots and Israeli headquarters. The headquarters gave the orders to attack the ship. Then two pilots said, "It's an American ship." The response to both inquiries was, "You have your orders, attack the ship." With the first pass, the Israeli aircraft took out all the antennas on the ship. The ship, I might point out, was an observational vessel. After many hours of strafing by the aircraft, torpedo boats from the Israeli Navy fired 6 torpedoes at the Liberty, with one hitting at the waterline and killing 20-plus soldiers. This was followed by helicopters that came broadside and fired at the wounded men and the men on stretchers that were either being carried to safety or those waiting on deck for relief. They are the new Nazis. And America is complicit in this. In fact, they helped to cover up the attack. Even Robert McNamara, Secretary of Defense, called the rescue aircraft that were launched to defend the Liberty halfway into the attack. The cover was that the Israelis thought the Liberty was an Egyptian ship. Just another line, a long line, a repeated behavior by the Israelis. We are witnessing the end of any hope of civility, Paul. Yeah, Paul, the reason I was talking fast there, most of the people listen to this program understand about that. I'm glad you brought it up. I think it's former Congressman Paul Findlay who wrote the book, The Attack on the USS Liberty, I think. I read it so many years ago, and it was just astonishing what the Israeli military did that day to the U.S. military. And nothing ever happened. Nobody was ever prosecuted. Nobody was ever brought up on charges about it. The United States just rolled over and said, "Oh, okay." Unbelievable. 37 dead Americans, over 100 wounded, and it was an attack that lasted 6 hours. And everybody knew, everybody in the Israeli government and the Israeli military understood that they were attacking an American ship. But it didn't make any difference. Christ. All right. I'll tell you what. We have a break coming here. We got three people holding on. Kathy will ask you if you want to do podcast trivia. And if you don't, we're going to have to clear the lines and do some podcast trivia. Because we promised. Is it time to break? It's not time to break yet. But during the break, Kathy will ask and ask each of the callers again. And if you all would like to do podcast trivia, take a shot at it. What the hell? It's not going to kill you. Well, don't ask the neocon. Ask somebody else, all right? Just find out. If nobody wants to do it, we'll do it after I talk to these three people. I don't know. I mean, what am I going to do? Huh? We're on hold. They got people on hold. They'll figure it out. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. All your life, you are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the line of a dark black night.
There's the music. It's time, once again, ladies and gentlemen, for podcast trivia, where you can answer the question correctly and win a one-year subscription, a podcast downloads, the Molly program, commercial-free, yada, 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 with a retail value of $59.60. It's one hell of a bargain. All you have to do is get the right answer. And let's start with Tara is in Arcata, California, right?
Well, it's Arcata.
Arcata.
It's Arcata, and we are over here are listening to you on 1480 AM.
Yeah, KGOE.
KGOE, our progressive talk radio. Yay.
It's a great station. All right, are you ready for podcast trivia, Tara?
I am, but may I tell you about something right afterwards that's super important for the golf, a substance that could help?
You certainly may.
Why, thank you.
All right. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Okay. Theme music, maestro, or the ticking clock, whatever the hell it is. All right. Here's your question, Tara. Representative Josie Sestak, Democrat, recently defeated what longtime politician in the Pennsylvania primary for the Senate? Was it Senator Chris Dodd, Senator Branch Lincoln, Senator Arlen Specter, or Senator Ron Paul? Who did Representative Joe Sestak defeat in the Democratic primary?
C. Arlen Specter.
Arlen Specter, you got it! All right. Tell the crowd to shut up. All right. When we finish your phone call, I'll put you back on hold, and Kathy will get the pertinent information, okay?
Okay, it is super important. And by the way,
yeah,
may I donate this to the next guy? I don't even have a computer.
You don't, that's all right. I'll tell you what. You can do you have a friend who has a computer?
Probably.
All right.
Well, but I wanted to give it away to one of our other listeners. Was that stupid or what? No?
No, that's not stupid. That's very, very kind. But I'll tell you what we'll have to do.
Okay.
Right now, you can give that information to Kathy. Right now, okay. let's move on to what you were talking about, what you really called in about, the effective microorganisms.
Yes, yes. Okay, so I listen on my great radio station to some Sunday gardening shows, and two of them are live, and one of them, it's called Easy Organic Gardener, but there was a speaker on there. They talk about all kinds of different things.
Mm-hmm.
There was a guy on there, and he was talking about these effective microorganisms that break up all kinds of stuff. For one strange example, if you spray it on something stinky, it'll break down the stinky stuff right away, and they use it in compost to break down compost quicker, and I think they use it in something that is made that's a composty-like gooey stuff that you make kind of like a wet compost, only a lot faster, called bokashi.
Uh-huh.
I'm not sure. But anywho, so the thing is, when this oil thing first happened,
yeah,
I thought, wow, this could break down this oil. And as strange as it may seem, then on the next time that they had it, they had this guy on again, and he said, oh, this could break down the oil. And not only that, they've got enough of it for the Gulf.
Well, I wonder why it's not being used by BP.
Well, so far when he was talking, he said he hadn't got any answers back. That was like a week or so ago. So maybe he's, I don't know. But I've tried to get through to other shows so that people could hear it.
Yeah.
And thank you for letting me through, because lots of times you're on hold forever and then you don't get to talk to anybody, like Tom Hartman is so busy and this and that. But I wanted to talk to you guys right off the bat, first off, but sometimes you're busier than others, and I finally got you.
All right. Well, Tara, thank you for the information. And hold on now. Kathy will get some information from you about what to do with your winnings. So just hold on, all right? Kathy, your humor is a little bit bizarre tonight. Jan writes in, Mike, former Congressman Paul Finley wrote, they dare to speak out. It was James Ennis, E-N-N-E-S, who was on the Liberty and wrote Attack on the Liberty. Both highly recommended reading, Jan, in Marin County, I think. Joe is in San Diego listening on XM. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Okay. I had that right, too, but I couldn't.
You were second in line.
Yeah, I know. And I wanted to talk about this book written by Harrison Edward Livingstone.
Yeah?
Back in 1992. It's called High Treason 2.
Yeah.
Chapter 28.
Yeah.
He's implying that he's giving an implied warning about oil companies in the military complex.
Uh-huh.
And he says there were also, oh, let me go up here. There are many people entrenched in the upper levels of the bureaucracy and the military who are in a position to push the president around. It is exceedingly difficult for anyone to control them.
Mm-hmm.
And this secret team, a conglomeration of persons in those areas of government, have the power to create and direct foreign policy on their own, carry it out, and if necessary, ruin or exterminate any opposition.
Right.
Various factions of this bunch are...
No, wait. Joe, how much are you going to read, man? Come on. No, don't.
One more paragraph?
No, that's too much. That's too much.
I'll stop right there.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, but when we get callers, our rule is kind of, you know, put it in your own words. And if you can't put it in your own words, just tell us what the book is, and people will go ahead and take a look that way. But
it's known as the club.
Huh?
It's that the wealthiest is known as the club.
Yeah.
And he blames the Texas oil men and their allies in the military.
Right. All right. Well, listen, Joe, I got to go. I got to move on here. I appreciate you checking in, but I got to move on. Thanks, pal. Take care. All right. Oh, what's this? Oh, good. Howard is in Sunrise, Florida. Howard, why do they call those old retirement places Sunrise? Isn't it more like Sunset?
Yeah. Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm an AK.
A what?
An AK.
An AK?
Yeah.
What is that?
Alta Cocker.
A what?
An Alta Cocker.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's an old man.
What language is that?
Hebrew.
Ah,
Jewish.
Okay. Well,
okay.
Yeah.
So right away, I'm going to be wrong in this instance, okay? The Liberty was a terrible, terrible thing.
Okay, that's not what you called. That's not what you called in about. What you call in about?
That's what I'm calling it about, okay? And about, isn't it interesting that every resolution at the UN, which is a...
Wait a second, Howard. I'm sorry. I'm going to put you on hold because we have a rule here. When people call in and Kathy says, what do you want to talk about? You told her you're Republican and the Gulf thing is all Obama's fault. Now, if you want to talk about what you said you wanted to talk about, we'll do it. What do you want to do?
Yeah.
What do you want to do?
I said what I was going to talk about, anything. That's what I told her.
No, all right. Well, listen, sorry, pal. Don't pull that stuff on me. You're not calling the Limbaugh program. He wanted to say that the Gulf oil spill was all Obama's fault. Right. And he probably would also say that 9/11 was Clinton's fault. Right. Yeah. Okay. Goodbye. What was his name? Goodbye. Who cares? Adioski. Howard. Yay, 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 yay. From the Arizona Republic newspaper, a group of artists has been asked to lighten the faces of children depicted in a giant public mural at a Prescott school. The project's leader said he was ordered to lighten the skin tone after complaints about the children's ethnicity. R.E. Wall, director of Prescott, Arizona's downtown mural project, said he and other artists were subjected to slurs from motorists as they worked on the painting at one of the town's most prominent intersections. Quote, "We consistently for 2 months had people shouting racial slander from their cars," Wall said. Quote, "We had children painting with us, and here come these yells of the N-word and another word for Hispanics." The children The children depicted on the mural, as we mentioned before, but feel compelled to repeat, are little kids who go to the school, a K-5 school with 380 students and the highest ethnic mix of any school in Prescott. Wall said thousands of town residents volunteered or donated to the project. And these children, for the past several months, as this happy mural encouraging green transportation was being painted by local artists, have been treated to the city of Prescott's finest citizens driving by and yelling the N-word and the S-word at this school wall painted with pictures of the children who attend the school. And this has been encouraged by City Councilman Steve Blair, who uses his local radio talk show to rile up these people and demand the mural be destroyed. And now the faces are being painted white, quote, because of the controversy, unquote. Remember when you what happened there? All right. Remember where you were when you could still laugh about teabaggers and racists and Arizonans? Because funny time is almost over. If the unemployment keeps up, one in five adult white males has no job and will never have a job again, and people keep walking away from their stucco heaps they can't afford, and the states and cities and counties and towns are passing their racist laws to rile up the trash even more. We'll be back. Stay with us.
Nobody knew from time to time if the plans were changed. Oh, 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 if the plans were changed. You can beat us with wires. You can beat us with chains. You can run natural rules, but you know you can't outrun history train.
It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Sharon Gordy, Military Affairs, Bruce Enberg, Economic Affairs, Kay Petrini, Education, Bob Alexander and Bridget Wolf, Ethics Advisors, Kathy Bay, who's the executive producer and the engineer for this program. Here it is from Reuters. Israeli forces seized an Irish-owned ship bound for Gaza, boarding the Rachel Corrie, some 35 miles out in the Mediterranean. A spokeswoman for the campaign group supporting the ship said it was unclear whether there was any violence, although those aboard had said in advance they would not resist. An Israeli military spokeswoman said she had no information. Oh, you liar. Israel had said it would not let the ship through. The vessel, named after an American pro-Palestinian activist killed in the Gaza Strip in 2003, was seized 5 days after a convoy of six ships was halted, including a Turkish ship on which nine people were killed by Israeli commandos who stormed aboard. Among those aboard the Rachel Corrie, campaigners said, were Nobel Peace Prize winner Mairead McGuire from Northern Ireland and Dennis Halliday, an Irish former senior official at the United Nations. Well, massive passive resistance. And by the way, the story from the Arizona school, that's an elementary school mural featuring the faces of kids who attend the school, has been the subject of constant daytime drive-by racist screaming from adults. The an actual city councilman has a radio talk show campaign going. The screaming is to remove the black student's face from the mural, and now the school principal has ordered the faces of the Latino and black students pictured on the school wall to be replaced as light skin, repainted as light-skinned children. Son of a bitch. You know, I sometimes wonder which state is more insane, Arizona or South Carolina. You people in Arizona, I mean, the silence is deafening over the rest of the country. You're allowing this to go on? You're allowing this kind of stuff to go on? Okay. Whatever works, right? David is in Northampton, Massachusetts. Hey, David.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for cheering us up this evening.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's my job.
Hey, listen, I'm not sure if you yourself are a Southerner, but sometimes...
No.
Oh, okay. When I hear this garbage, I kind of wish we lost the Civil War.
Say what?
I say when I hear this nonsense about what goes on in the South, I wish we had lost the Civil War.
We being?
Well, the country. I'm making a joke, Mike.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, I didn't succeed on that.
I'm sorry. I'm too full of prednisone tonight to get the humor, but okay.
All right. Well, listen, on a more serious note, you know, it stuns and amazes me that if you had a large 18-wheel tractor-trailer driving down the highway with fuel oil or dangerous chemicals, and it had an accident and exploded and spilled its cargo all over the roadway on a public road, the state or the authorities would immediately secure and take care of the situation. Not just because they have to, but there's liability issues involved there,
mm-hmm.
too. Well, the Gulf is a public safety issue as far as I can tell.
Mm-hmm.
So, isn't the federal government, in a sense, theoretically, liable in a case like this for their failure to respond in a...
You know, I would imagine there is some liability there. It's probably buried someplace in national maritime law. We probably need to get Mike Papantonio back on the program, the guy that hosts Ring of Fire, along with... Robert Kennedy Jr. And ask him about that. Papantonio is one of the attorneys who got the tobacco industry for $240 billion, and he's working on putting together lawsuits for you know, people who have been grievously harmed by this, which is everybody, just everybody. So maybe we can do it. Maybe we can get him back on next week. But I'm sure there's something. In maritime law, although, you know, I don't know if they were in, I guess they were in coastal U.S. waters. I guess so. So I guess there is some liability for.
Well, I would assume so. I mean, I would think that if there was some kind of vessel distress and the explosion didn't occur, you would think that if they put out an SOS that the Coast Guard, a federal agency, would respond to
right.
assist.
Right.
So, I mean, that would answer that kind of question. But if, in fact, we are at a pivotal point where this may or may not shift to renewable energy, we may be having a Jimmy Carter deja vu situation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But my suggestion here to make the switch, why can't people vote with their wallets? Why can't we have a system where people could buy special bonds that are where the monies are specifically dedicated to public-oriented infrastructure, for instance, a publicly owned renewable energy facilities financed by the people where interest money would be returned, where you've got that complete circle of money flowing in the same area in the same place like credit unions do.
It could be done. I don't think Americans have the political will at this point. You know, we've talked about this before. We have been immersed in learning how to be helpless. You know, this learned helplessness where, oh, well, it's, the government has to do it or the corporations have to do it. And there's no difference between the two any longer. Government is corporate America. Corporate America is the government. There's a huge unlearning process, David. I think we have to go through, and whether or not Americans have the will to do that. And I'm not talking about revolution or picking up guns or any of that garbage.
No,
I'm just talking about, relearning how to have courage and backbone and a sense of justice and a sense of determination where it concerns making things right. I don't know if we're still capable of doing that anymore. David, I got to leave it there. Thanks, pal. I appreciate you checking in. I'll see you Monday night, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. Watch out for hornets. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin, Kenny, wherever you are.